Attention, please.
This is The Drive with Josh Graham Podcast. Tune into The Drive 3 until 6 p.m. weekdays on the Sports Hub.
I love it. It's brilliant.
Adam Schefter reported 20 minutes ago that Cam Newton has been officially ruled out for Sunday's game in Arizona, but that's not keeping us down. Kyle Allen's going to start for Carolina. That's as expected. But here's the thing. Call me crazy, but I still like the Panthers to beat the Cardinals. It was an epiphany I had last night while watching Gardner Minshew carve up the Tennessee Titans. Not only do I think Carolina's going to win, it shouldn't be an upset. In other words, let me phrase it this way. The Carolina Panthers should beat the Arizona Cardinals. Kyle Allen, he doesn't need to take over this game. If Cam Newton didn't turn over the football with an interception and a pass that was behind the line of scrimmage thrown backwards to DJ Moore, they beat the defending NFC champs in the opener at home. And it was kind of a throwaway game against Tampa Bay on 4 days rest where random things always seem to happen. You know, like Gardner Minshew carving up those Tennessee Titans. What do we really expect from Kyle Allen? What does he need to do in order to give Carolina a chance to win this football game? For me, it's lean on Christian McCaffrey, who we saw in game one, able to put up over 200 all-purpose yards against those Rams. This isn't a great Cardinals defense. I watched them play on Sunday in person against the Baltimore Ravens. Lamar Jackson, he could do whatever he want. He got players in space. A lot of those guys won 50-50 balls in the air. And Carolina has guys who, if you give them the ball in space, they're going to make players miss. So you have McCaffrey, but it's also Allen had great chemistry with in the preseason, all reports said. DJ Moore, of course. Greg Olsen's going to be a reliable target for Kyle Allen. So it's easy to think, okay, you're replacing Kyle Allen with Cam Newton. How can you expect Carolina to win? But Carolina has this great roster around the quarterback that they haven't had in past years. Cam wasn't being asked to do that much, which is why the injury he sustained, or the way that he played while clearly injured, was as staggering as it was last Thursday night, losing to Tampa Bay. I think as long as Darrell Williams isn't a turnstile again at left tackle, and Dante Jackson isn't getting worked at wide receiver or at corner, Carolina's going to win this football game. Another reason why they should win. Ron Rivera, he should be able to out-scheme Cliff Kingsbury. This is one of those rare instances in the NFL where you have a head coach who's coordinating the defense going up against a head coach who's coordinating the offense. Cliff Kingsbury, he's in control of the Arizona offense. Former Broncos head coach Vance Joseph has the defense. Meanwhile, in Charlotte, Ron Rivera took over for Eric Washington late last year, and the decision was made that he was going to be the defensive coordinator and call the defense this year. So you have a head coach on offense who last year was a Big 12 head coach and one that got fired at that Big 12 school, going up against a two-time NFL Coach of the Year. Rivera should be able to out-scheme Kingsbury the same way when Tom Brady was nicked up the few times he was the last 20 years. Belichick put together a scheme that put his team in a position where they could win. I expect great coaches to do that. Pittsburgh's playing San Francisco this weekend. I expect Pittsburgh to be right in that game or even win the game. That's what great coaches do. Tomlin should be able to out-scheme Kyle Shanahan. And Ron Rivera should be able to out-scheme Cliff Kingsbury. Also, there's extended rest, with it being a Thursday night game last week, for some of the nicked-up players like Greg Olsen. Olsen told me in the locker room, man, I'm feeling it. I'm too old for this bleep. Thursday night football, after a Sunday game, it's a bit much. Luke Kuechly, he's known to be one of the best game preparers across the league. He's the Peyton Manning of football on defense. Give him extra time to prepare for a rookie quarterback and Cliff Kingsbury's offense, if he can figure out what Sean McVay's doing, and he did, I don't think he'll have a problem figuring out what's going on with these Arizona Cardinals. I really don't. So I like the Carolina Panthers to win this game. I'm going to be at North Carolina Appalachian State tomorrow. I've already said I expect North Carolina to also win that game the same way I expect the Panthers to win. But Appalachian State fans are so excited about this. This might be the most highly anticipated regular season game in Appalachian State history. Now, no game's ever going to be as important as that game in Ann Arbor was in 2007, going on the road beating Michigan. But that's not exactly what I'm saying here. In the lead-up, this game has three things that the Michigan game did not. It's an in-state matchup. The game's going to be played right in App State's backyard, an hour and a half or two down the road in Chapel Hill. Also, the history, a 79-year drought. North Carolina and Appalachian State haven't faced off since 1940. And, of course, this is the first time they're meeting as FBS schools. Also, there's a hope of winning for App State. Now, you might be the biggest hardcore App State fan there is and said to all your friends back in 2007, Armonte Edwards, he's going to move the ball on this Michigan defense, and you better watch out. This Jerry Moore defense is going to find a way to stop Mike Hart and company. We have a shot to win this game. But I'm here to tell you, 98, maybe 99% of Appalachian State fans thought they had no shot to win at Michigan. Pretty much all the same people thought they had no shot to win at Michigan. Not here. App State fans expect to win in Chapel Hill because Miles Dorn spent a lot of time talking about football culture and Wake Forest lacking it after the Deacs beat the Tar Heels a week ago. App State not only has football culture, they have championship culture. And they have championship culture in FBS in the Sun Belt already, which is incredible. And Scott Satterfield deserves a lot of credit. But so do these players. Zach Thomas. This defense. Some of these skill position players who are back. It's a new head coach. But many of these same guys are the same players who went into Penn State last year and almost knocked off the Nittany Lions and Happy Valley. Mack Brown's presence. I think just his presence should add to the intrigue here. He's bringing North Carolina back, but he also at one time was the head coach at Appalachian State. It was only 1 year. It was his first head coaching job in 1983. And things, I think it's fair to say, things have changed quite a bit looking at App State football now versus what Mack Brown was dealing with back in 1983. This was Coach Brown earlier in the week.
And when I got there, we didn't have dealer cars. We were driving state cars. We had to check out. We had to teach class. They only allowed you to take 33 out-of-state players because it was too expensive with an out-of-state scholarship compared to an in-state scholarship. I think our equipment manager was a student. Our trainer was a student or really, really young. I think I was the SID when we got there because I remember trying to put things together to have a media guide. But to see what that program has turned into is just really, really rewarding for me.
How excited are Tar Heel fans about this game? Desmond Johnson, the producer of this program, Aaron Gabriel, and the control room as well, taking your calls at 336-777-1600 on Twitter at Sports Hub Triad. That's something I'm interested in. If you're a North Carolina fan, heck, if you're an Appalachian State fan, a good day to chime in on the program. Des, you like the Tar Heels, but you've made it clear, not a big football guy. How many Tar Heel football players do you think you can name right now?
Sam Howell, Mack Brown.
Players.
A couple of wide receivers.
Can you name a wide receiver?
They got a defensive back.
I'm asking you to name wide receivers and or players, and you just said a couple of wide receivers.
Yeah.
I also just said the name of a player about 2 minutes ago. And
yeah. I'm not very
retention's
good.
Retention's not that great.
I'm a face guy, Josh.
How big,
I'm not very good with names. I'm good with faces.
How big is this game to you? I think you already answered the question just
no.
a second ago.
I mean, it's for me, for starters, I'm happy that we're competitive. I mean, that helps in terms of wanting to watch this game. Because App State, they're going to come out and they're going to play tough football. And I respect App State. Been the Boone many a time. So enjoy going there. But yeah, as a Carolina fan, especially this year, it's different to talk about being 2-1 when normally this time of the year we're like, you know, 1-2 or something, or 0-3 and desolate and desperate. So
this game matters more to Appalachian State. It hasn't been played since 1940. It's in their state. They're playing Carolina. Yes, North Carolina, the flagship school in the state. You get a chance to get one over on many of the people that surround you. And there are more North Carolina fans in the state of North Carolina than anybody else. But North Carolina should win the game. You got a better coach, and Mack Brown is more proven than Eli Drinkwitz. I don't mean that as a slight to Eli Drinkwitz, but come on, Mack Brown is a Hall of Famer. North Carolina has better resources. They have better raw talent. And they had the home field advantage. But Vegas is essentially telling us they think App State's a better football team. If you get home field, that usually means 3 points if they think you're even. App State is only a 2.5-point underdog. So they think App State is a half point better than North Carolina is. So I'm looking forward to being there in person tomorrow. You are listening to The Drive, which is broadcast live in the law offices of Timothy D. Welborn Studios. Learn about all the ways Tim Welborn can help you online at timwelborn.com. You'll know when you need us. On the season, my best bets are 6-3. We're making you a bunch of money. Maybe we could bankrupt a casino. I'll give you my three best bets for this weekend. Next.
Tell them to bring me my money.
Stay tuned now for...
This is...
Countdown commence. 5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
I would like to introduce you at this time...
The Sports Hub at AM 600, AM 920. Now back to The Drive with Josh Graham.
This is one of the three best hip-hop songs of all time. I don't want to hear anything else. Bombs Over Baghdad, Outkast, one of the three best hip-hop songs ever. Shout out to Dr. Johnson for choosing the music today. I like working in threes. That's why I give my three best bets out at this time every Friday during football season. And we've been 6-3 through 9 games. That's 3 weeks for those doing math at home. And I'm such a college football nerd. I'm excited tonight for Air Force Boise State. Reggie Bush is going to be returning to the Coliseum tonight, where he's banned from attending games. But since he's in a working capacity for Fox Sports 1, he's allowed to be there for USC playing number 10 Utah, a team I had in the college football playoff going into the season. So I'm all in on the Utes. I don't think that's the game to circle tonight. Air Force and Boise State, they represent two of the five best group of five teams across the country out of the Mountain West Conference. That is a massive game being played on the blue turf at Boise. Air Force +7, tasty at Boise. Wyoming, let's get weird. The Cowboys +3.5 at Tulsa. I was tempted to go that way, but none of those games are as good as the three I have in my best bets. Des, I understand we have imaging for this now. Here is my best bet. All right. Let's start things off with North Carolina, Appalachian State. I already said North Carolina should win this game. 2.5-point spread against App State. Vegas is essentially telling you that App State's better than North Carolina is. Now, I usually like picking dogs when it comes to looking at these Vegas lines. I don't like laying points. But North Carolina, I just believe them to be a better football team right now. They're coming off a loss. They had 8 days to prepare for this game. App State's coming off a bye. But I wasn't impressed with what the Mountaineers did in Charlotte, or against Charlotte. Ted Roof, defensive coordinator, he's very experienced. I don't know if proven is the word I would use as a defensive-minded Eli Drinkwitz. This is his first FBS head coaching job. I think it's good these teams are playing each other, but it's in Chapel Hill. North Carolina is the better team, but the better coach. I think this is going to be a double-digit win for North Carolina, so I like them laying 2.5 against Appalachian State.
Put some money on it.
Panthers-Cardinals. I like Carolina to win, but I don't want to bet the spread. I like the total here, 44.5. Another thing I don't like doing is betting the under. You're essentially rooting for nothing to happen. Yeah, I don't want to see any scoring here. I'd rather just sit here and watch field goals and punts all day. I think this is a game where Kyle Allen is going to struggle a little bit early on to get the offense moving. They'll still win the game because the defense is going to control things and Christian McCaffrey. I'd be surprised if both teams score 20 points in this game. So I think this goes way under 44.5.
Put some money on it.
And lastly, it's Michigan-Wisconsin. The last time we saw the Wolverines, they were at home and they nearly lost to Army. If Army hits a field goal at the end, then Michigan's national title hopes are done. I mentioned the Utes I have in the Final Four or in the college football playoff. I also like Michigan to be there as well. When it comes to the Wolverines, they're a 3.5-point dog on the road at Wisconsin. I really feel like Michigan would have been a touchdown favorite in this game before the year started. They were up 38-7. On Wisconsin last year late in the game. This is a blatant overreaction to the Army game. They've had a week of rest. Don't overthink this. Michigan's a better football team. They're getting 3.5 points. Jim Harbaugh has to get it done, has to win this year. So give me the Wolverines plus 3.5 at Wisconsin.
Put some money on it.
Those are my three best bets. North Carolina laying 2.5 against the Mountaineers. Panthers, Cardinals under 44.5. Michigan, plus 3 in the hook at Wisconsin. I'm feeling a 3-0 weekend here. We haven't had one of those yet. Our first 3 weeks, we've been 2-1. Dez, this is the weekend we go 3-0 because I like the sound of 12-3. I like how that sounds.
Put some money on it.
It's a real nice little record that would be.
That's it.
Rooting for you,
buddy. In Vegas, if you're betting, if you're hitting 59-60% of your bets, you're a real champ. You're doing an excellent job. You might as well be a shark. But right now, we're at a 67% clip. It's early. It's only a 9-game sample. But I've been thinking about these spreads all week long, and I've been looking at what's going to happen with North Carolina and Appalachian State for even longer than that. So I really like the North Carolina spread. I do like the Tar Heels to win this game by double digits, and I don't mean that disrespectfully to Appalachian State. So those are the three best bets I have there. Scott Fowler will join us to talk Panthers-Cardinals in about 10 minutes from the Charlotte Observer. We're already seeing college basketball headlines in the news, and they involve Zion Williamson still. This is a headline on ESPN. Duke freshman Cassius Stanley breaks Zion Williamson's vertical record. Now, I don't see any official measurements for what the vertical was, but they have a video there, and Cassius Stanley, to his credit, is jumping quite high. But that's not what I'm finding interesting here. Zion's name is in the headline. How come you don't just put that in the third or fourth graph and say Duke freshman Cassius Stanley broke the vertical record? That's kind of what happened last year when Zion set the mark. It leads me to this point. Duke has the second-ranked recruiting class in the country this year. But that's not really going to matter because of how much attention Zion and RJ got a year ago. I think Duke's second-ranked class is going to get overshadowed by Zion and RJ. It's not fair, but college basketball nationally is still very much a niche sport. In here, we're ground zero. We're at the spot. College basketball matters the most in America, here in the Triad. So this might sound abnormal to you or your family who's loved college basketball your entire life, but across the country, it's just not followed that way. We're already seeing these headlines with Zion's name in it for Duke basketball this year. And I think it's going to continue throughout the season. Cassius Stanley's first dunk in a game. Yeah, that was great, but not as good as what Zion did. The athleticism not really going to match what Zion did. These two players not as good as Zion is, Vernon Carey and Cassius Stanley.
they're not going to be consensus All-Americans. I find this piece to be the most interesting part of what's going to happen with Duke basketball in 2019-2020. The reason, the root of what's interesting, they might be a better team. They're not going to be a more interesting team than Zion and RJ, that Duke team. But they might be better because for the first time since the Blue Devils won the national title in 2015, they have a returning point guard and a very good one in Trey Jones, who would have gotten drafted if he decided to go pro. He's back. Duke's more experienced than North Carolina is. When's the last time you've been able to say that? Jack White and Javon Delorier returning. Alex O'Connell returning. Joey Baker returning. And then it's the influx of freshmen. Stanley, Carey, Wendell Moore, top 25 player in the ESPN 100. It's a fascinating deal what's going to happen with these Blue Devils. Because they can be better, I think, than what Zion and RJ did a year ago. Might even win the ACC. But they're not going to get nearly the attention. And doesn't that fascinate you? A team that might be better doesn't get the attention. It shouldn't surprise us. Virginia went 33-3 in the ACC in 2 years. How often is Virginia talked about nationally? How often is Virginia on the highlight reel on these shows? Unless it's Zion dunking on Jay Huff with the right hand. Ratings and interest isn't exactly created as a result of wins. It's about athleticism. It's about highlights. It's about what you can put on a 6 to 10 second clip on Twitter or on YouTube, on Facebook, on television that makes people go, wow. That stuff matters just as much as winning when it comes to TV networks and radio shows talking about your team. Duke won't struggle to get coverage because they are a damn good team again. But I still don't think it's going to mirror what we saw in this past year. And even though this class is very good and the team might even be better, they'll always be looking to Zion and RJ saying, wow, these aren't two consensus All-Americans leading the way, and we've never seen anything like Zion. I don't care how high Cassius Stanley can jump. The Drive brought to you in part by our friends at Pie Guys Pizza and more. Find them in Clemens, Louisville, Clemens Road. Take that right to the Kinnaman Village Commons. Try the Graham Slam Pizza. Perfect thing to try this weekend. PieGuys.com. It is Pie Guys Pizza and more, a great sponsor of the program. How much will Kyle Allen need to do in order for the Panthers to win on Sunday? We'll discuss with the Charlotte Observer's award-winning columnist, Scott Fowler, next on The Drive.
Dude, you gotta hear this.
Hear this. Go ahead. I think I want to hear this.
You're on The Drive with Josh Graham, the Sports Hub, at AM 600, AM 920.
Boys and girls who might be unfamiliar with what the Friday news dump is, it's just happened in the last 10 to 15 minutes as Antonio Brown just cut by the New England Patriots. They have a statement which I want to bring to you in just a little bit. But just a few minutes ago, according to reporting done by the Kansas City Star, Kansas basketball is expected to face multiple major violation allegations from the NCAA. So there is a lot for us to chew on with that. But I'm interested in getting some information for things that I'm not qualified to know a lot about. I'm not a doctor. I'm not qualified to speak about these injuries in the way that Dr. David Guyer is, who literally wrote a book all about sports injuries a few years ago. Renowned sports orthopedist who also spent some time here in the triad. It's good to have you back on the show, Dr. Guyer. Cam Newton is among the players who have been talked about a lot this week. He has a left midfoot sprain. That's how it's described. He sustained it against New England, played games 1 and 2 of the regular season. That New England game was game 3 of the preseason, by the way. And he apparently re-aggravated it against the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. He's going to miss Sunday's game against the Arizona Cardinals. What can you tell me about what Cam might be dealing with in regards to his injured foot?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, and thanks, Josh, for having me on. I think that this is potentially worrisome. I mean, you know, it sounds like he suffered it, as you say, during preseason, and he got back to play okay. But any time you have an injury of the midfoot, and that's an area sort of, if you think of the arch of your foot, those bones on the top of the arch of your foot, there's a lot of force that goes through that part of your foot with pushing off, with running, with jumping. And so this is the same injury. If it's more severe, it's called a Lisfranc injury, and most of those in athletes actually need surgery. What we're hoping here is that he just sort of stretched those supporting ligaments among all the bones in the arch of his foot. But that's a worrisome thing, and you have to be very careful with it because, you know, if you actually get some movement between those bones because of ligament damage, it can actually lead to long-term issues, you know, midfoot arthritis. So I think you have to be very careful with those, and unfortunately, when you say careful, that tends to be weeks, you know, and sometimes many weeks.
So were you surprised that Cam tried to play week one in the first play?
No, I mean, if it was mild, again, that's what's hard not being involved. But if it truly is mild, where there's just sort of a stretch of those ligaments, maybe you wear a boot for a week or two, or you just don't practice and you just, you know, just do normal walking, non-weight-bearing or non-impact activity, so no running. And if it goes okay, then I'm okay with it. But the fact that it's flared up again, I think you might have to be a little more cautious.
Elsewhere in the division, Drew Brees is going to be missing 6 weeks approximately. He had surgery on his thumb on Wednesday. Will Drew Brees be limited when he returns 6 or 7 weeks from now?
Maybe early, but I actually don't think this is a bad injury long term because there's no risk of things like arthritis or anything like that. You just have to be careful not to let him do too much too soon. I don't think they'll do that. I mean, I think a lot of, you know, people have seen the picture of him that he posted on social media where he's in a cast and he's trying to do like a thumbs up. I think that they're going to be appropriately cautious. You know, maybe starting weeks 4 or 5, they'll start motion and start grip. But I think, you know, 6 weeks is probably best case scenario. I think more like maybe 8. It would not surprise me if they actually bring him back. I don't know when their bye week is, but sometime around that time frame, 8, 9, something like that. But then long term, it should have no real effect on him going forward.
How about Ben Roethlisberger? Should this be something he returns from?
Yeah, what's hard to know is that, at least to my knowledge, we've never had official confirmation of exactly what that is. The writer for The Athletic that covers the Steeler, I've known him for a long time, Mark Cabali, and he told me he's heard from people in the organization that they think it's a Tommy John injury, the ulnar collateral ligament on the inside of the elbow that the pitchers in baseball tend to suffer. If that's the case, that's a long rehab. You're looking at about a year before you're throwing as hard and as well as you were before the injury. And sometimes it can be even longer than that before you really look like the arm strength and all that you had before. So, you know what, 38 years old, that's a lot to ask, but is something you can get back from if you really want to. So, again, it's hard to know for sure because they haven't confirmed that, but that's based on what I've heard, at least, that's what I would expect.
It is Dr. David Guyer who's joining us here on Sports Hub Triad. The book he wrote a few years ago that I strongly recommend picking up if you're interested in the subject matter, That's Gotta Hurt, The Injuries That Change Sports Forever. You can follow him on Twitter at Dr. David Guyer, G-E-I-E-R. When I saw Andrew Luck just completely defeated at his press conference, deciding to leave the sport, and I see Cam Newton, the injuries he's sustained over the last few years, some of which with the broken ribs and the shoulder stuff he's had, it almost looks like injuries you would sustain in a car accident versus injuries you expect to see in sports, particularly basketball or in baseball. It has me asking fundamental questions about football that we constantly hear is safer with more knowledge and more treatment practices that doctors like you have tried and have worked successfully. But if we take the knowledge off the field and the way that we handle these injuries out of the equation and just examine the game, are you convinced the game itself has gotten significantly safer?
Yes and no. I think the rules changes have helped. I think we've gotten better equipment to a certain extent. We'll never get completely safe helmets, but they're better. I think that they're working to make, you know, the turf safer. They keep trying new generations of artificial turf. They've talked about putting even padding under that to make it safer. So in a lot of ways, they are making it safer. But then you're also up against the opposite side of that. Guys are bigger and stronger and faster than they ever were. I mean, if you just go back and watch games, you know, the highlights of the games in the 60s and 70s, the offensive and defensive linemen were they were just tiny compared to the guys now. And so I think it's we're asking the turf, we're asking the rules, we're asking the equipment to protect guys against way more violent force, you know, much worse hits than they ever were before. So I'm not convinced it's safer. I think they are. I do agree that the NFL is trying. I don't think that they're ignoring all this, but I question how safe you can make this sport, especially when it comes to brain injuries. I just don't think you can make this completely safe, and that's the nature of how this sport is played.
Dr. Geyer, appreciate your time. It's always welcome, and I'm sure we'll be talking sometime soon.
Yes, no, thanks for having me, and I love doing the show. You know, as a Wake Forest alum, especially happy that they're 3-0 this year. Always love talking to you, and call me anytime.
Hey, the Deeks, I'm telling you right now, Dr. Geyer, the Deeks, they got it going on this year, so if you're at a game, let us know.
Absolutely, yeah. All my friends here are Clemson fans, and I keep giving them a hard time that their toughest game may be the team in Deacons this year.
All right, thanks, Dr. Geyer. On Twitter, at Dr. David Geyer. Again, pick up his book, That's Gotta Hurt, The Injuries That Changed Sports Forever.
I'm not a doer or a thinker. I'm more of a talker.
You're on The Drive with Josh Graham, the Sports Hub, at AM 600, AM 920.
The Kansas City Star has reported the NCAA is prepared to issue a notice of allegations detailing multiple major violations inside the Kansas men's basketball program. NC State was the first of what's expected to be six major programs at least to be charged by the NCAA and dealt out notices of allegation. And the notice comes after just a full summer of speculation with a top NCAA official coming out publicly and saying that six schools are expected to be charged. That was Stan Wilcox who said that. But all along, Kansas was mentioned in this. It shouldn't surprise anybody that they're getting a notice of allegations. With that said, though, when you start looking at the facts and the evidence we're privy to, none of it, absolutely 0% of this, proves that Bill Self knew. There is plausible deniability with Bill Self. Within college basketball and that coaching community, I can tell you that there are many college basketball coaches who have told me off the record that they know that Kansas has done shady stuff when it comes to recruitment for some stud players the last 10 years. But those are just allegations. You have to have hardcore evidence unless you're somebody like Louisville and Rick Pitino, who was already in a spot things were uneasy. The prostitution stuff and other bad headlines that surrounded him, it made it very easy for Louisville to say enough with Rick Pitino. I don't think Bill Self is going to be outed here. I don't think he's going to be among the coaches who are in serious danger. There might be assistants involved. There's going to be people who allege Bill Self knew, but just like the academic scandal, never touched Roy Williams and North Carolina, never could get back to him, and there was plausible deniability there, there is plausible deniability with Bill Self. And he doesn't have the track record in his background where Kansas feels compelled in any way to, air quote, do the right thing morally and move off of Self. I find it puzzling that Stan Wilcox would say publicly, this is back in June, that at least six schools would receive a notice of allegations for level one in violations. What benefit do you get from saying that? You saying that you're going to get some major programs. That feels like it's eliminating due process ahead of time. You're one of the sides that's trying to do things the right way. You are the representing body of the sport. You going out there publicly, we're going to get some major programs. It stinks. And with NC State, they received the notice of allegations. There were two level one infractions, but they namely focused on the coaches, Mark Gottfried being the big name who's now out of NC State and he's at Cal State Northridge. You're left to believe that that's going to be the approach for other cases, such as this here. If that's the case, then they might be trying to go right at Bill Self. But unlike some of the damning evidence surrounding Mark Gottfried and what he allegedly did to get Dennis Smith Jr. on campus, I don't quite see that here with Kansas. There's people out there who are saying, yeah, everybody who's accused here, let heads roll. By God, we need to get the corruption out of this sport. But you also have to be able to prove it, too. And nothing's been leaked to the media that suggests Bill Self knew about the shady business Kansas is alleged to have committed or been involved in with the FBI scandal. Yes, sir.
I can't help but feel that the NCAA, they're going to find out a way to mess this up. They're going to figure out some way to stumble over themselves, and nothing is going to happen to these top schools like Kansas and USC?
It's NC State and only Kansas right now.
Well, that I've gotten the notice, but there were six schools, right, that they said.
Well, we don't know. We don't know who the other schools are going to be. We can speculate and guess who the other ones are going to be. But right now, all we know, it's Kansas and it's NC State right now.
What would you put odds-wise, 1 to 10, with 10 being highly likely and 1 being not likely at all, that Kansas gets some sort of
Kansas might get punished. There might be fines. I doubt it would be a postseason ban, but I wouldn't rule that out. But I'd say there's less than a 5% chance Bill Self gets punished in any way. Yes, Aaron.
That's the part that's always wild to me when these types of things come up, that head coaches get sometimes the benefit of the doubt as to whether or not they knew what was happening within their program.
Sure.
I just usually think that if you're a head coach of a program, you know when something's not right.
But it will be interesting. Are one of the charges the NCAA puts in this notice of allegation, is one of them going to be lack of institutional control? Because that is the heaviest crime, the most substantial crime that the NCAA can levy. And they tried to get North Carolina with that, but they didn't put it in NC State's notice of allegations. They specifically focused on Mark Gottfried and the individuals who were involved, thinking that that would probably serve as a deterrent, a better deterrent if you go after the name coaches. That would scare more people off from trying to recruit in improper ways. However, to your point about the NCAA messing things up, they usually do. But in the past, they never really had the same amount of resources that they have in this case because they didn't have subpoena power that the FBI and our government has. So when this is all playing out in court, and what the FBI finds is then handed over to the NCAA after criminal investigations are completed, most of the investigative legwork that the NCAA botches and has botched in the past is now already completed and done so by the Federal Bureau of Investigation. Investigations in their name. So if anybody, if there's any opportunity for the NCAA to get some coaches and get some big names and really lay the hammer down, it's here. But we don't have that evidence yet.
That's the number one thing out of all of this, that if you're Bill Self or NC State or any schools upcoming that might get notices, that's the one thing you should be worried about, that the FBI is behind a lot of the stuff that the NCAA is basing these notices on. They may very well have a recording of Bill Self talking to a student or a potential. We don't know.
I feel like we would know.
I don't know. I mean, FBI is pretty good with keeping things to themselves when they want
really?
To. When they
because
want to.
We learned about alleged video or audio of a wiretap with Sean Miller that's out there. Allegedly that's out there.
Allegedly.
That he knew about a $100,000 payment to DeAndre Ayton. That's the coach I'm most worried about. I put Sean Miller into the same category as Rick Pitino, where so much, you get so much smoke that you say, I don't want to deal with this anymore. And if you look at what the Arizona Board of Regents has done, right now, they're standing behind him, kind of. Because unlike all these other coaches, Sean Miller was forceful in denying this. He was forceful saying, it's not true, it's false. And Arizona backed him because he's a winning coach. But I believe the Board of Regents got a document signed, an agreement that if anything else came down involving Sean Miller and that he's guilty of the crimes that he said he's innocent of, and he said so very forcefully, that not only would Arizona be able to fire him with cause, Sean Miller would then have to pay the school $1 million. That's something that came down last year. He's the one I'm interested in to see if one of these six programs is Arizona. Will Arizona fight the same way Kansas will? Maybe even NC State, even though it seemed like the charges weren't as severe in the way they might affect NC State versus Kansas, since many of the parties that are involved are no longer at NC State. The director of athletics, Debbie Yao, retiring, and Mark Gottfried, once again, being at Cal State Northridge. I'm going to be at Appalachian State, North Carolina, tomorrow. 3:30 kick. Is this the most highly anticipated regular season game in App State history? I'm not saying this game's as important as the Michigan regular season game was. I'm not saying that, but the lead-up for this game, it has things that the Michigan game did not. In-state opponent, right in your backyard. There's a 79-year drought that these teams haven't played each other. The last time Appalachian State shared a football field with North Carolina was 1940. And unlike the Michigan game, I don't care how big of an App State fan you are. If you said you thought App State was going to beat Michigan in 2007, I'm not going to believe you. It's one of the biggest upsets in the history of sports. That's not what we're looking at here. There's a hope of winning. There's App State fans who are confident that they're going to beat the Tar Heels Saturday at 3:30, tomorrow at 3:30. Mack Brown's presence, I think, adds to the intrigue. Brought North Carolina back to relevance already, it seems like, through three games. And he's a former Appalachian State head coach. 1983, he was the head coach at App State for 1 year, but things were a little bit different back in 1983 than what they were or what they are now with Eli Drinkwitz leading things. This is Mack Brown from earlier this week.
And when I got there, we didn't have dealer cars. We were driving state cars. We had to check out. We had to teach class. They only allowed you to take 33 out-of-state players because it was too expensive with an out-of-state scholarship compared to an in-state scholarship. I think our equipment manager was a student. Our trainer was a student or really, really young. I think I was the SID when we got there because I remember trying to put things together to have a media guide. But to see what that program has turned into is just really, really rewarding for me.
Pretty neat to hear Mack Brown talking about his time in Boone. This game matters more to Appalachian State, but I think North Carolina should win it. You got a better coach. This is Eli Drinkwitz's first gig as an FBS head coach. First game, he's playing on the road. Ted Roof, what he did defensively against Charlotte left you wanting a lot more. If you're the Mountaineers, allowing 41 points at home, not good. Better resources in Chapel Hill, more raw talent, home field for the Tar Heels. I think North Carolina is going to win the game.